So tonight I've decided to go to Consciousness and the Absolute. And last time, you may remember, last time we were in this book, last week I went to the Gita. So it was 2 weeks ago when we were in this book. But last time we were in this book, I read a very short conversation where Nisargadatta announced that he had cancer. So what I'm doing now is reading the next message. He announced that he had cancer on May 14th, 1980. And so today we're going to look at the next conversation, at least the next one in this book. You know, whether anything else happened in between or not, I guess we don't really know. But the next conversation in this book is July 29th, 1980. So a question asked is, why did this consciousness arise? Nisargadatta says, you are both the question and the answer. All your questions come from your identification with the body. How can any questions relating to that which was prior to the body and consciousness be answered? There are yogis who have sat in meditation for many, many years seeking answers to this question, but even they haven't understood it. And yet you are complaining. When I wrote NTI, and I wrote NTI Romans, especially Romans chapters 1, 2, and 3, which is basically the NTI version of what A Course in Miracles calls the tiny mad idea. You know, it talks about how, you know, we had a wish that there was something different than what is. And as soon as we had that wish, there was an idea presented. Actually, it was two ideas presented. For the first time, there were two things. One idea was, you know, what is what is, and it can never change, which was the truth. And the other idea was kind of like, oops, it just changed. And NTI says we became engrossed with option B and went deeper into it. And that's how we got deeper into fantasy, right? But when I heard that story as the scribe, I knew it was a story. And I knew that it was just giving me something helpful. And it has been helpful. There are a number of ways that particular story is helpful. It was just giving me something that was helpful, that would help me undo the ego. And I also knew that whatever the truth is of it, you know, how the second principle of God developed, and then the third principle of God, the fourth is a little easier to understand. But however all of that happened, I knew was something that could never be told. It was something a mind could never grasp. It could never be told. It could never be understood. And so I've understood ever since then, ever since I was the scribe of NTI, that all these stories, and there are a number of different stories, you know, some say God wanted to get to know himself, and some say a question arose, and the question was, who am I? And that started the whole thing. You know, there's a number of different stories. But I've always known that they were all just stories. And I've even observed at times, which is just insane, you know, people in places like Facebook arguing over which story is true. And that's crazy because none of the stories are true. So what we do when we hear these stories is we understand that the stories are being told for a particular reason. And so you really need to ask, you know, what can I get out of this story? Right? And the one that's told in NTI, what NTI Romans really teaches is that judgment, you know, judging, you know, because it says basically when we ask the question, you know, what if there could be something different than what is, and then these two options showed up, it says first we judge the question as a valid question. Because we judged the question as a valid question, two options showed up. Then we made a judgment about which one we preferred, and judgment is the problem. Well, if you understand the story in that way, then you understand the corrective process of letting go of judgment, which is an actual corrective process. You see? So the story is told in a way to help you return, even though the story is not true. It's the same thing with the story that says, this story I've heard mostly from non-dual communities. There's a story that says the way it started was, again, a question arose, but the question that arose was, who am I? Like, God became curious, who am I? And because there wasn't really an answer to the question, answers begin to appear and be selected from, right? Well, that's really what the ego does. From the time that, I mean, maybe not from the time that we're born, but at some point, you know, when we begin cognizing enough about the universe around us, you know, we start wondering, who am I? And we pick up clues from our parents or whoever our primary caregivers are, and we end up building this identity. In fact, to this point, we haven't stopped. To be honest, I mean, when you're driving down the street, in one moment there's a thought, I'm a good driver, and the next moment there's a thought, I'm a bad driver. I mean, it, you know, it's constantly happening in your mind. You're telling yourself who you are, and from one moment to the next moment, those things could be in conflict, but you never even notice, you know. But that's what the ego does. The ego is, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? But then what sages have taught us is how to use that same question to reverse the process. Right? So these stories, at least the good ones, even though they're not true, therefore it's stupid to argue with anyone about, you know, which one of these stories is true. If you listen to the stories, they do have morals, you know. The moral of the story is they have morals that will allow you to start heading back, even though you can never actually understand how the first principle of God developed into the second principle of God and into the third principle of God and the fourth principle of God. One way that I like to understand it, just because it feels really good to me, is that it's just actually a natural evolution. You know, so many of these stories seem to imply that it was unnatural. And in fact, after A Course in Miracles, you know, I love A Course in Miracles, and I hate A Course in Miracles. It's one of those love-hate relationships. Maybe some of y'all know what I'm talking about. But yeah. But one of the things that happened to me in A Course in Miracles, after reading about the tiny mad idea, first of all, they call it the tiny mad idea, and somehow we interpret that to mean tiny bad idea. It never actually said that. It's a tiny mad idea, you know, meaning crazy, not true. But we interpret it as the tiny bad idea, at least most of us did. Then, you know, there's this guilt that arises for not being awake. And people have guilt for, quote, creating the world when they learn they're creating the world, and guilt for the miscreations. And, you know, there's just, people feel guilty for even seeing form, like I'm not supposed to see form. All these kinds of weird things start to arise. And I don't know where we get the idea. I guess the ego is the answer. That this is bad. The teaching says it's not true. But what if it's just a natural evolution? Even though we can't quite understand it. It's just a natural evolution. It evolved to this point, and it's a natural evolution that the awakening is occurring, you know? And that there's no guilt, right? Everything's just kind of happening naturally. But that's just my own little way that I like to understand it. Let me just check my text. Okay, it's just a smile from Jay. I had told Jay the website was up, so I just wanted to make sure he wasn't saying it wasn't working for him. Our website went down a little bit ago, and I quickly got texts and messages and emails. People are on the ball. But when I checked, it was just down temporarily because our host was moving it from one server to another server. But enough people went in on that few minutes. You know, it's nice to know people use our website. But it should be working now. So again, you know, Nisargadatta says, you know, there are yogis who have sat in meditation for many, many years seeking the answer to this question, you know, how did this happen? And, you know, they can't understand the answer. Nobody knows where consciousness came from or why it developed. And so the questioner says, it is a great mystery. And then Nisargadatta says, it's a mystery only to the ignorant. To the one not identified with the body, it is no longer a mystery. And like I said a while ago, it can't be told and minds can't understand it. I don't have a problem with, although obviously I don't know this, I don't have a problem with what he seems to be implying here, that once you awaken to the first principle of God, you have an understanding of that. You know, that kind of makes sense, right? Let's see. I don't know if he'll attempt to tell us or not. We'll find out. But he is saying that for him, it's no longer a mystery. And the questioner then says, Maharaj cannot convey it to us. Like, I give you no, why don't you tell me? And Maharaj says, I keep telling you, but you don't listen. And the questioner says, does Maharaj see us as individuals? And Maharaj says, there are no individuals. There are only food bodies with the knowledge I am. There is no difference between an ant, a human being, and Isvara, which I don't know what Isvara is. Does anybody know? I can't remember if this book has a glossary or not. It does. Let's see if it's back here. Oh, God. It's God. Another word for God. So there is no difference between an ant, a human being, and God. They are of the same quality. The body of an ant is small, an elephant's is large. The strength is different because of size, but the life force is the same. For knowledge, the body is necessary. I have no question just trying to find the words, pardon me. I have no question that everything that appears in form is made of the same stuff. You know, even if, you know, he's talking about an ant and an elephant and a human and God. But to be honest, I think even my diet Dr. Pepper, if my consciousness went into this diet Dr. Pepper, I'd find the same thing. You know, like there's just nothing here that's different. And again, I've had experiences, which you guys know about, the experience as an apple, the experience with the towel rack, the experience with the floor. Limited experience is true, but enough where I feel that I know that everything is absolutely alive and it's the same consciousness. So I don't have any problem with that. And in fact, if you hang out with me enough, you'll find that I sometimes forget myself, which means I forget that other people aren't like me, and I will say hi to a table. I feel that way about it in my heart. I will put something down on a table and tell the table, thank you, you know, for holding my phone. And it's not like I do that all the time. It's not like every time I put my phone down, I say thank you to the table, but it will just spontaneously come out of my mouth. And it's not the mind. It's not me playing a game. It's my total acceptance that everything around me is alive. I just told a spider in the bathtub that he had to either get out by morning or I was going to have to remove him myself because I had to take a shower in the morning, and we'll see what he decides. But you know, I don't know what kind of spider this is. I know some spiders are poisonous, you know, and I don't want to risk the body. You know, I understand that stuff too, right? So I'm not going to take a shower with him. I'm going to remove him if he doesn't remove himself. But I don't actually see that spider as different than me at the same time. I really don't. That spider is consciousness, and I'm consciousness. And that's my primary way. I see that first and foremost. It's a very natural understanding for me, even though the eyes don't see. You know, I don't see like I did when I was an apple. If I still had that sight, I wouldn't be able to function in the world. I wouldn't even know it was a shower, right? Or a spider. I wouldn't see those things. I would literally only see light. So I don't see that way like I did during that temporary period of time when I was an apple. But having seen that way, I know what everything is. And it's not forgotten. It's just not forgotten. It's a strong awareness. So I understand what he's saying. Now, when he says for knowledge, the body is necessary, I'm not 100% sure what he means by that one sentence. There is another story that I heard once. I think it was actually Bentinho that shared this with me. And the story is really that, obviously everything is consciousness. The whole world is consciousness. And that consciousness evolved into the human being so that it had the brain and the ability to reawaken. So maybe that's what he means by for knowledge, a body is necessary. Yeah, Ron, you want to speak to this since you might know something?
I think that's Nisargadatta's feeling too. And some of the other things I've been reading and listening to, that's his sense that it's the we're at the pinnacle of evolution and those below us just don't have that capacity. You know, the ant, the bird, that are.
And that's what I think I got from Bentinho once too. So I accept that as an absolute possibility, you know, sometimes people say animals don't have egos. I think it's very possible that an ant might not have an ego. But boy, I'll tell you what, dogs do. Heck, we saw a cow last week that had an ego, didn't we? She was she clearly had an ego. She was crossing a river, and she looked beautiful. You know, the grass was all green. The river was flowing. I mean, she just looked gorgeous. In fact, what we were really trying to do was pull out a camera so we could get that, you know, a phone actually, so you could get that gorgeous picture. But boy, she started looking at us like, what are you looking at? And she started hurrying along. And you know, you could tell that there was something in her that had a sense of me and that was uncomfortable with this situation and wanted to remove herself from the situation as soon as possible. It wasn't even the same as a deer. It seemed to have more awareness of human and cat, you know, and that could be because cows are domestic animals. They say that animals that have been raised around humans have more of an ego than animals that aren't, and that may be true. But you can see it in her. You know, if you live with a dog, you know a dog has an ego. Some dogs even feel guilt, right? But the question is, do they have the intelligence to heal that ego? Yeah, maybe not, right? So maybe the purpose of the human is literally what A Course in Miracles says, to heal the world, right? To heal the world. We know, because we're really all one consciousness. So maybe that's what he means by this. But, you know, I am using conjecture here. This is something I don't know. It's not anything that I've ever heard from within myself. And anything that I ever share, I never share someone else's knowledge as if I know. I only share my own knowledge as if I know, only what I've realized from within. And this isn't anything that I've realized from within, so I don't know. The next question is, let me look at the time. Okay, how did Maharaj get the name Nisargadatta? Oh my goodness, I must have read this before somewhere because the first sentence looks familiar. At one time, I was composing poems. Poems used to flow out of me. And in this flow, I just added Nisargadatta. So he must have just signed one naturally. I was reveling in composing poems until my guru cautioned me, "You are enjoying composing these poems too much. Give them up." What was he driving at? His objective was for me to merge in the absolute state instead of reveling in my own beingness. This was the way I realized knowledge, not through mental manipulation. My guru said, "This is so." And for me, It was finished. If you continue in the realm of intellect, you will become entangled and lost in more and more concepts. Consciousness is time flowing continuously, but I, the Absolute, will not have its company eternally because consciousness is time bound. When this beingness goes, the Absolute will not know I am. Appearance and disappearance, birth and death, these are the qualities of the beingness. They are not your qualities. You have urinated. An odor is coming from that. Are you that odor? I think now that he has cancer, he's going to get a little more smart aleckish than what this looks like. He's always been a bit of a smart aleck, but heck, now he's dying, so he might as well go all the way, right? You have urinated. An odor is coming from that. Are you that odor? So one thing that I find interesting in this, and of course now we are talking about the human beingness is dying, right? And listen to this sentence. When this beingness goes, the Absolute will not know I am. So what I hear in that sentence is in this time-bound moment when he's speaking, both the beingness and the Absolute are present. But the beingness is going to end and the Absolute won't. That's what I hear him saying. You know, so he's realized the Absolute, for lack of better words, is conscious of the Absolute. But the beingness is still present. The beingness is now ending. And when the beingness ends, the Absolute will continue. It will not end. That's what I hear him saying. I'll read the sentence again. Consciousness is time flowing continuously. But I, the Absolute, will not have its company eternally. Doesn't that imply he has its company now, right? Like they're both present for him. But I, the Absolute, will not have its company eternally because consciousness is time-bound. When this beingness goes, the Absolute will not know I am. Appearance and disappearance, birth and death, these are the qualities of beingness. They are not your qualities. So, of course, here you are the Absolute. You know, a human sees a human. The I amness sees the I amness. And the Absolute sees the Absolute. And remember, the guy asked him a little bit earlier if he sees individuals. I think in his own roundabout way, he has answered this question. No, I see the Absolute. Right? Although the beingness is present for me right now, what I really am and what I really see and what I really know are the Absolute. And now speaking to the Absolute, I guess. And again, we can't tell this creation story. I'll be done in about 2 minutes, Don. I want to finish this message. I'm almost done. He says, you have urinated. Right? So now think about urinated, but think about the first principle of God urinates, and here comes the second principle of God, the third principle of God, and then the odor, which is the fourth principle of God. Right? You have urinated, an odor, the illusion, is coming from that. Are you the odor? No, you're the one who urinated, right? I mean, it's a silly Nisargadatta-like analogy, but you can hear it. No, you aren't the odor. You're not even the urine. Consciousness would be the urine. right? The illusion would be the old odor. You're the one who urinated, you see? So are you the odor? And the questioner says, no, I am not. And he says, this beingness is like the urine, right? Because the beingness is consciousness. Can you be the beingness, right? You're not the odor. You're not the illusion. You're not the person. Can you even be the beingness? Can you be the urine? Absolutely not, he says. And Nisargadatta says, you require no more practice. For you, the words of the guru are final. So he just wants us to go and realize that we are not the urine or the odor. We are the one who urinated. And that is the end of the message. I wonder what I should title it. Should I title it, You Are the One Who Urinated? No, she says. Okay, I'll come with a different title then. Good night, everyone.
The world is a cesspool.